I wonder what, if anything, others would say that each of us was devoted to. The most common answer, I guess, would be to speak of a person's devotion to their family, especially to their children or their marriage partner, a devotion that may or may not be properly recognised by its beneficiaries. A mother had spent many years taking care of her sick child, and when they were very close to the end, he spoke to her in tones. "You know what? You have been with me through all the bad times. When I lost my job, you were there to support me. When my business failed, you were there. When I got shot, you were by my side. When I lost my house, you took me in. When my health started failing, you were still by my side." "What are you trying to tell me?" his mother asked gently. "I think you bring me bad luck," he replied. We might speak of people as being devoted to a cause, devoted to a career, devoted to following a sport. Stories of a fisherman who never wanted to miss a day at the riverside in the angling season. Just as it was about to end, he was there, as usual, with his friend, when a funeral cortege passed by over the bridge. The fisherman uncharacteristically put his rod to one side, stood up and doffed his cap, which his friend had commented on something he'd never done before. "Well," said the man, "we were married 53 years. That verse from Acts chapter 2 we're focusing on reports how the early Christians were devoted not primarily to their families or their fishing, but rather to their faith. Or rather, it focuses on four specific priorities which they know would help them grow in their faith. They devoted themselves, Acts 2:42, to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. First up, the apostles' teaching. I take that to mean that the apostles spent a lot of time and energy committing themselves to some kind of teaching program, and those who have been converted to the Christian faith acceded willingly to the idea, taking up the opportunities given to learn from the apostles. Part of the reason for that, no doubt, is because the apostles provided the clearest link to Jesus' own teaching. Those men had been there when, for example, the Sermon on the Mount was preached. We get the impression that, like any preacher, Jesus repeated some of his material in different contexts, so the apostles between them would have had a fair recollection of his public ministry. Notice, though, that the writer of Acts doesn't just say they devoted themselves to Jesus' teaching, but to the apostles' teaching. There was a recognition that, as well as relaying the all-important words of Jesus, God was revealing his truth to the New Testament apostles in the same kind of way that in Old Testament times he had revealed it to the prophets. In the next generation or so, as the apostle passed into history, there was clearly a conviction by the Christians that were left, not only that the record of Jesus' life and teaching must be preserved in writing in the Gospels, but also that the apostles' written teachings needed to be passed on to future generations of believers as well. You may be aware, occasionally some speak today of themselves as being apostles in the same kind of way as Peter and James and Paul. That's no small claim. If they're right, Christians should hang on to their every words. You must work out what you make of those kind of contentions. For myself, I'm generally fairly sceptical. For us all, though, the closest we're going to get to the teaching of the original apostles is through the New Testament. Occasionally, the merits of the Bible feature prominently in our media, but not so much generally because of what it actually says, but rather the literary merits of an older translation and its influence on our culture, which is probably rivaled only by the works of Shakespeare. However, though, we're no doubt glad of the enrichment that biblical phrases such as salt of the earth brought to the English language. Well, surely that's not the primary reason for the scriptures. If it was, they might be of interest, but not of real devotion. Whereas the early church was devoted to the apostles' teaching, And so we should have an unashamed focus and allegiance to it through the scriptures. The second emphasis. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship. Devotion to the fellowship means, first of all, a commitment to the grouping of people that form the church in Jerusalem. Maybe they still had other responsibilities and priorities to their families, to their employees or masters. But as far as was humanly possible, the new believers didn't just have a commitment to the Lord, they had a commitment to the fellowship of believers. These days that doesn't come as naturally as maybe it once did, particularly to my generation and younger. Observers of our society say we're no longer natural joiners in the way that previous generations were. And that affects all voluntary groupings that would once have thrived in an area like this, as well as the church. The story is told of a man who was a believer, but who justified his loose connection with his local church when, on one of the rare occasions he attended, he was confronted by the new pastor, who was a lot more forward than his predecessor. As the man was leaving, the pastor grabbed him by the hand and pulled him aside, saying very directly, "You need to join the army of the Lord." The man replied, "I'm already in the army of the Lord, pastor." Question was asked, "How can we only see you at Christmas and Easter?" To which the reply came back, "I'm in the secret service." For some, there may be a real reason which limits a commitment to the fellowship of believers. Needless to say, though, if too large a proportion view themselves as serving Christ in the secret service only, it won't be long before there isn't a local church to go to, even occasionally. And notice how, for the first believers, they weren't merely regular attenders at the fellowship, they were devoted to it. And devotion to the fellowship surely means not just a commitment to the well-being of the organization, but to other individual members as well. Christ's relationships with church members were important as well. I'd observe that's often fostered by smaller groupings and gatherings within a church. And it's great to see mutual care and fellowship that's associated with many of our midweek activities. There are two more strong commitments that the author of the book of Acts highlights. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread. You may well know the lines about the leader of a major denomination debating with his advisors about a proposal from McDonald's that the church consider changing the Lord's Prayer to say, "Give us this day our daily hamburger." The good news is, he said, as he was explaining it to others, we could get £50 million for it. The bad news is we'd lose the contract with Wonderloaf. Breaking bread together has, we see here, been part of Christian worship from the very beginning. Some argue that what's being referred to here is just a sharing of meals, which we know was very much a part of the early church life and worship too. Most see these words as a reference to the breaking of bread in the context of worship, that is, to Holy Communion. In some churches, it may be an ordinary slice of something close to Wonderloaf that's shared. We happen to use unleavened, purpose-made wafers. Either way, they're there to remind us of Jesus as the bread of life. With the breaking of bread, taking us back to Jesus' body broken on the cross for our forgiveness. The early Christians were devoted to the breaking of bread. Not, I'd suggest, as an end in itself, but because the regular make sure that they remembered Christ crucified for them. Then finally, they devoted themselves to prayer. Some 100 or so years ago, 5 young college students were spending a Sunday in London and went to hear the most celebrated preacher of their day, Charles Spurgeon. While waiting for the doors to open, the students were greeted by a man who asked, "Gentlemen, let me show you round. Would you like to see the heating plant of this church?" They weren't particularly interested. It was a hot day in July. But they didn't want to offend the stranger, so they agreed. The young men were taken down a stairway. A door was quietly opened, and their guide whispered, "This is our heating plant." Surprised, the students saw 700 people bowed in prayer, seeking a blessing on the service that was soon to begin in the church worship area above. Slowly closing the door, the gentleman introduced himself as Charles Spurgeon. I find that encouraging because we probably already know from the Bible the devotion to prayer of the first Christians in Jerusalem. We may perhaps occasionally hear accounts of thousands praying together in Korea. And yet, given how much most UK churches struggle to get even a dozen at a prayer meeting, we somehow think that's not in our English DNA to be serious prayers here in this land. Yet the story of 700 prayers at Spurgeon's church is only three or four generations ago in our own country. Spurgeon called the church at prayer the heating plant. Others have called it the power plant. When we wonder why we're not having the same impact on our community that the first Christians did in Jerusalem, well, part of it may be down to factors outside our control. I suspect, though, many of us would have to admit that as individuals and as churches, it would be hard to speak of us being devoted to prayer in the way that they were. In much of our culture, it's seen as a virtue to avoid any hint of overenthusiasm. Moderation in all things, we say. Though Oscar Wilde, in the play A Woman of No Importance, has one of his characters refute that rather elegantly by saying, "Moderation is a fatal thing. Nothing succeeds like excess." And if we long for the success of the early church in reaching others with the good news of Jesus, we'd do well to learn from their excess, their devotion to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Amen.